It is said that the witching hours are when all the dark things come out from hiding and have the world all to themselves. A world seen through devil eyes. A world of evil and filth. A world of lunacy. Join us. Join Late Night Psychorama.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to another episode of Late Night Psychorama, where you will get two movies that have nothing to do with each other, a la the glory days of the drive-in. There will be spoilers, so if you do not want the movie spoiled, stop this, go find the movies and watch them, and then come back to us. I'm Joe.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andrew.
And we have a guest this episode.
Yeah, hi there, everybody. My name is Brian Clark. I used to be on Attack of the Killer podcast. I now write for Scream magazine. My first article will be out in the April issue, I believe. And a fan of the deplorable and degenerate cinema like the rest of these guys.
Perfect.
Yay.
What's your article on?
The first one's going to be on Son of Kong, which I think is a greatly underappreciated giant monster movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, no. I'm surprised. I didn't even think... I was thinking you're going to name some, like, Late Night Psychorama type shit, but that's actually a great movie.
Congratulations on that article.
Thank
you very much.
Kong sequels are there? Is there just Son of Kong, or is there... minus, like, the Toho movies and stuff.
Yeah, there's just the two in the original continuity, and then the several remakes and...
Oh, wow.
And the Skull Island legendary one, however you want to count that.
I should revisit Son of Kong, because I watched it on TCM. They played it, like, in October when I was in high school, like 2003.
Oh, yeah. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, very long time ago.
It suffers from everything you would imagine a rushed into production, small budget sequel would suffer from, but it does have one of the greatest bits of realism, I think, in any movie I've ever seen. Right, it opens, and Carl Denham is in hiding in an apartment building in New York, being hounded by process servers because literally every single person in New York is suing him for damages.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah,
that's true.
That's a brilliant place to start.
So, Joe, what movies are we doing tonight?
Tonight we will be doing Virgin Among the Living Dead. And Awakening of the Beast.
Silêncio. A besta está dormindo. Depois de três décadas nas sombras, volta às telas do Brasil Zé do Caixão, personagem imortal da mitologia brasileira, criação do grande cineasta José Mojica Marins. Cuidado! A besta pode acordar. O Despertar da Besta. Um filme violento, incendiário, quebrando todos os tabus da moral hipócrita, iluminando com a dura luz da verdade a face oculta de cada um.
It's Friday the 13th. We should mention that. Of course, we aren't doing a slasher movie or anything.
We don't do that.
Yeah, typical of us.
Well, yeah. It wasn't Friday the 13th when we thought about the movies that we were going to do.
Right.
We also thought we'd be recording on a Thursday.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
So, no harm, no foul.
I mean, that
this also won't be out in time.
Yeah, this episode is not going to be out until fucking. It'll be out in November. That's Friday 13th.
Yeah, the November listeners are like, "What the fuck are they talking about?"
Does anybody know how many Friday the 13ths we get this year?
Just this one and in November. I checked.
I thought there was one that just happened, though. No?
Was there?
Maybe not.
Maybe in the summertime, I think there was one.
Yeah.
Because I remember people were talking about Friday.
That's last year, then.
Yeah.
I mean, in honor of that, should we just briefly throw out our favorite Friday the 13th movies?
I actually am going to watch the first one for the first time in, 17 years later tonight.
Oh, okay.
It's literally been that long.
I was just going to say, it's definitely the first one of any of them for me.
I always loved the second one, though.
Yeah.
That's the one that's, the most slasher movie. I mean, they obviously all are, but that one's, the one that's, all the best bits of the slasher movie. I like the hood more than the hockey mask. He looks like more of a scary backwoods degenerate.
I like my Friday the 13th without Jason.
Yeah, you're true. You're true.
Andrew, what's yours?
I don't know. I don't really like many of them.
I like my Friday the 13th titled The Burning.
Yeah, there you go. You know what's funny, though? I remember year three of the Horrorthon, we saw Final Chapter, and I remember just enjoying that for what it was, though.
Yeah, the first four are good.
Yeah, the third one is whatever. The gimmicks are silly.
Yeah.
The fourth one is a lot of fun, but I think more recently I switched over from liking two the most to liking one the most because I watched them back to back.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, yo, okay, well, I'm changed. Yo, Brian, you got one?
You're only going to hang up on me the second I say this because there's no defensible reason it should be this way, but I love part 7.
Oh, that's the Carrie one, right?
Yep. Yep. Jason versus Carrie.
I can understand why.
I like the idea, but they were all pretty neutered by that point, weren't they?
That one has almost no gore in it. Yeah. It got beat up pretty bad by the censors. But the Jason suit is great. The decaying, the John Carl people are beating up looks awesome. There's some good stunt work in the final fight when she's throwing him through walls and staircases and stuff.
I kind of wish they did more gimmicks like that. Like, they caught on to that, after the fourth one, rather than waiting all the way to 7. Just versus Carrie or versus, or he gets stuck in a road trip or something. They start doing weird shit.
That's Takes Manhattan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But he's on a boat, 9/10 of that time.
Yeah, he's stuck on a trip.
Not only is he on a boat, he's on, a small boat. And then wipes everyone out and then just gets on a bigger boat.
Right.
It's like they couldn't have enough boat in that movie.
I love
this boat isn't big enough for both of us.
I love how on the first Friday 13th, Camp Crystal Lake is easily a small little lake you can easily just swim across.
Yeah.
And then by part 7, it's attached to the Atlantic Ocean that takes you to Toronto that's supposed to be Manhattan.
There is a great podcast called Voorhees We Trust with Gourley and Russ, and it's Matt Gourley and Paul Russ doing just every Friday the 13th movie and fully discussing it. And they harp on it and have a lot of fun with just how the location changes, like how it shifts from New Jersey to Southern California.
Right, right.
It's like mountains and cactuses and shit. Well, all right. Now we know that about ourselves.
Joe, why don't you tell the folks at home all about A Virgin Among the Living Dead?
Christina travels to Europe for the reading of her father's will among her European relatives whom she has never met. This awkward situation that she is entirely too upbeat about gets even more awkward when she realizes her relatives are the undead.
Bum, bum, bum. Does she not even know her dad in this movie?
Yeah, he sent her away to boarding school, apparently,
Yeah.
That's what I'd do if I lived in a haunted house.
And, right.
Yeah. You know, my relatives were all there just
wanting
the being house. Haunted.
I'm really blanking here. I have no idea if we are going to be foes or allies on this. So I'm just going to jump up there and say, I really like this movie.
I enjoyed it.
Okay. All right. Because sometimes, like, I'm like, I'll watch something like, this is Joe all the way, but then you'll fucking pull the carpet out from under me. And I'm like, wait, what? Okay, I'm going to say this. This is going to sound bad, but I'm going to be completely honest. It took me 5 nights to watch this. I put it on at like two in the morning, smoked a bowl, and watched about 20 minutes of it and fell asleep. Yeah. And then the next day, you know, went 20 minutes ahead to that part where I left off, fell asleep. But this movie is so dreamy and weird and macabre that it's actually like the best way to watch it, I feel.
What, like stoned at 2 a.m.?
Stoned at 2 a.m. and like barely, like just like half awake.
In and out of sleep. Yeah,
yeah. I think that really actually made the movie a lot better than if I was like awake at 1 in the afternoon watching it sober all the way through.
Yeah, just looking out at the sunlight.
Right. Like, yeah, it's like, oh, is this going to pick up? Like, this way I was like, oh, wow, I really like this weird Euro horror. And then there's this John Waters Pink Flamingos-esque funeral with all these weirdos standing around. And I was like, all right, like, I can grab onto this.
Yeah.
Brian, you said that this you hadn't seen this before.
No, I had not seen either of the movies you were watching.
Oh,
tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, neither have I, honestly. So.
Well, yeah, that's normal.
You know, before we get any deeper, is there any way we can confirm what versions of this movie we
watched? I was going to ask if anybody happened to watch the zombified version of it.
Okay, is the zombified stuff the ones where the zombies that look like they're from, like, the Six Flags Fright Fest...
Probably
commercials are walking around, and there's this lady that should be in, you know, a generic black metal video, like walking around with them, and then like they get the lady in the house and eat her.
That sounds like it. I don't remember.
That's the added stuff. No. Okay, then, I saw that.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
That's the re-release version that they did to cash in on Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
That's an 83 release, right? 1983?
Day of the Dead.
And my understanding is that that stuff was actually shot by Sean Rollin.
Yes, yes.
It is. Now,
funny because Sean Rollin would normally be responsible for more snoozy material.
Yeah. I watched the movie of his recently called Night of the Hunted,
mm-hmm.
and
that's a good one.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I like his stuff. I'm just saying, normally he's much more
right. It was
low key.
It was very dreary. It was like it was sort of like Shivers, but more
without the sex worms.
Right. Like a little less pulpy and just more sad and dreary.
Ryan, what were you going to say?
Cool. Well, all right. So this was baffling me because I watched the 1973 version, which is an hour and 30-minute long cut, which is, I believe, the producer version, which is longer than the Jess Franco version, which also has zombies in it. But it appears that in 1983, there was another version with more zombies. And I think that might be the Jean Rollin stuff added. And I'm not 100% sure, but I know that is the version I had seen first, and I hated this movie. We watched it on a VHS, and it was dreary, and there was almost no sexual anything, so to call it a virgin among the living dead left us all scratching our heads. And then the zombies, there were just all these senseless scenes of zombies walking around, not doing anything, just kind of walking around and assaulting a house. I can't find any version of that on the internet, and that's frustrating me. And I know that's the VHS that we had sitting at the last house I lived in Philadelphia. So I'm going to try to track that down and see what that looks like. With that said, I loved this movie.
Okay.
I was very surprised. I walked in expecting to hate it, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Did you also watch the one that with the Christina Princess of Eroticism title?
I did not. This had a Virgin Among the Living Dead title, but it was in French.
Card. Okay. So the version that I watched was dubbed in English and had the Christina Princess of Eroticism title card, which was the porn version that the producers made after they couldn't interest anyone in releasing it initially.
Oh, wow. That's the same version I watched.
Except the version that I watched did not have the porn stuff in it.
Yeah, mine did not either.
It had the porn version title card, but it was, to my knowledge, the actual Jess Franco director's cut version because it was only like an hour and 20 minutes long.
So we all watched the same movie, but we didn't watch the same
movie.
Very
different, yeah.
Well, that's real easy to do with Jess Franco, though. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the dude ever made a single movie that didn't have at least three different versions of it produced.
So. Right.
Ryan, did you enjoy this?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, this is exactly my kind of dreary.
Right.
Yeah.
The trippy, dreamy Euro smut stuff is yeah, that's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it looked, whatever I watched looked really nice. Whatever print it was HD, but it still had all the grit to it. And this movie in French is so much more elegant than I thought it was capable of being.
Mine was dubbed in English, so I just got the fucking.
Mine too.
Yeah, it's just.
It was bad dubbing too, I feel like.
I know. Like, the whole time watching it, I was like, I'm not really following what's going on, but I got a feeling that nobody really else is either. But, like, but it was just. You could cut and paste stuff out of it and to make like a cool, just weird music video. And it's the part where she's following the dad and he's like hanging on the noose and he's floating through the forest. Yeah, and I was like, oh wow, this is so cool.
I kind of like want that to be stolen and put in something else. Right. Like, it's a really cool shot. Even though you can tell he's just being like wheeled along.
Right, right.
Andrew, did you enjoy this movie?
So I'm kind of like lukewarm on it because I haven't really delved into Jess Franco that much, and it was a cool. This movie was a really cool like fever dream, just chaotic mess. I feel like, but I couldn't really get into it, unfortunately. But it's something I'll probably go revisit.
Ooh,
yeah,
you can barely see a variety of versions to check out.
Right. Yeah, maybe you just didn't find your.
I'm pretty sure I'm not gonna like the zombie one.
Find the one that fits you.
Get the hardcore porn version, and that'll be.
There was this one part where it was like, I might be multiple parts where the audio has nothing to do with what's going on and like what you're seeing. Like, wasn't there a funeral part and there's that you're hearing dialogue, but there's like definitely no mouths moving. Like, it's just weirdness.
My favorite is the guy who doesn't talk at all. He just makes weird noises and holds up the chicken head.
Yes.
That's Jess Franco, right?
And I it knew that was going to be your favorite person.
That's how I'm going to flirt with people at work from now on.
Basilio? The first time he's on screen in the version I watched, he is so clearly dubbed and his mouth isn't moving. Yeah. And it is those noises. And it's like both of them in a car. Yeah. It's like, who the fuck is making this noise? It's like,
It reminds me of like the voice Adam Sandler makes in all his movies. Just so you know, that weird like. That's what I remember.
It's me, Adam Sandler.
But just no real words.
It's good.
Say, of the Jess Franco movies I've seen, I actually think this might be the best one.
I'm with you there, although I have a long way to go with his movies. I've only seen...
Well, yeah, he's got like 250 of them, so...
What?
Yeah, he has a lot.
Yeah,
it's just
fucking...
I'm baffled that I don't think I've seen any other one. Right. I'm like, how did I not...
He typically directed like 5 or 6 movies a year, if not more.
He did an Ilsa one, or was it called something else?
It was Wicked Warden. It's unofficial.
Okay.
Its actual title is Greta the Mad Butcher.
Yeah.
And it got redubbed as an Ilsa movie later. And if you watch it, when every time someone addresses Greta / Ilsa, the dubbing is very obviously someone just says Ilsa into a microphone. and their mouths are saying Greta.
I think you saw one if you were there for it and or awake for it, because the Ripper movie that we watched that has Klaus Kinski in it, we later realized that we did not realize at the time was directed by Jess.
That the exhumed film Spanish triple feature. Yes. It had that weird Dracula movie where his like inbred deformed child was in the basement. Remember that?
Yeah.
Because, okay, I have a funny story about that. I remember that. And I went to the bathroom, so I missed his reveal. And I came back to the bathroom, and he came back, and I started laughing really loud. And nobody else in the theater was laughing.
For all, like, old news.
Yeah, I guess, like, every. So then I just felt like the biggest idiot, because I'm the, like, the joke play choice with me, moron, in the front row.
Do you remember what that one was called?
No, but I'm going to hunt it down, because right. I want to watch it again.
Are you thinking of the Dracula saga?
Maybe. Is it Spanish?
I believe so, yeah. But that's the one where Dracula is trying to sire a child.
Right. And he has, like, an ugly
or something.
Like an ugly baby Dracula in the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that was it then. I'm definitely going to revisit that. Because it may, and it, like, when it showed up, makes this, like, baby sound. It's just, it's like the baby from Combat Shock worked up as Dracula. I've seen Jess Franco's Women of Cell Block 9, which is like his, like, the big dollhouse knockoff, but with a lot more sex. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It had the Peter Lorre looking guy from Virgin Among the Living Dead in it too, but he was playing like an Ilza type character.
The guy who plays the piano all the time.
More like just waves his hands around as an old timey piano.
I was going to say, anytime, because we see him at the piano twice, I think. Right. During.
Well, he's playing an organ one time. No, he's playing a piano and organ sounds are coming out.
Yeah, and his like you don't see his hands or really even his arms. It's just kind of his shoulders for the most part. And just the spastic way in which his shoulders move shows someone who clearly has never played a key instrument.
So in this version, there are piano sounds coming from it, and it's used as a jump scare. Like, the piano sound happens upon Christina's arrival. And she turns, and rather than being startling, which it is as a viewer, kind of startling, she just smiles. So it's like a backwards, upside down play of that.
No, that part does have piano, but they're in, like, there's a funeral part, and I just remember organ music being played, but he's still doing his, like, hand waving piano playing.
Yeah, at first he's playing like something like real, like, upbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, well, isn't, like, the woman dying or whatever? And he's like, what, you want me to play a dirge? Fine.
Yeah.
But then his arms still move, like, all erratically. Yeah.
If I die, I want my funeral to look like the one from this movie. I want to be sitting in a chair with my mouth wide open, my eyes still open.
Constantly blinking?
Yes. I'll have the reflexes left. And get just like the weirdest bunch of wackos around, like Gigi Allen's funeral. Yeah.
Well, the only thing that I'm sure we can make that happen, but you know I'm going to sneak a Pepsi into your hand.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, I'll be telling your mom to get the fuck away from the casket. And Let's go. We got to go.
This movie had a different title that Jess Franco wanted. And if I brought my notebook, I would have it written down.
The Night the Stars Died.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he hates the title Virgin Among the Living Dead, which is stupid because that's one of the greatest titles in cinema history.
I was going to bring that up. I didn't want to step on anybody's toes if anyone was planning on.
No.
Oh, no, no.
Anytime you want to throw something out, you go right ahead.
Yeah, this is amateur hour. Free-for-all. Go ahead. Baby. Just thrash us all.
We were talking about how the weird, dreamy surreality of the whole thing worked better in this one than a lot of us think it does in other movies. It makes a little more sense diegetically because she has kind of entered the dimension of the dead by going to this castle that is supposedly had been abandoned for years. Mm-hmm. So does anyone know the backstory of Soledad Miranda and how this movie kind of came about?
I know Soledad Miranda. I don't know what she has to do with the movie, though.
Okay. This movie is kind of about her.
Okay.
So for those of you who didn't know, Soledad Miranda was sort of Jess Franco's muse. She worked for him a few times in real small parts and then got cast as Nina in his Count Dracula movie that he made with Harry Alan Towers. And after that, they did 5 or 6 more movies together. And when Vampiros Lesbos came out, it was extremely successful. It made a shit ton of money. Everybody loved it. And so this German producer named Arthur Brauner wanted to contract Franco and Soledad Miranda to come make a bunch of movies for him in Germany. And on the way to either sign the contract or to get to the set for the first something, she was heading for the business meeting or whatever and got in a car wreck and died.
Ooh.
And so Franco was locked in and he did some movies for Brauner, and this is the first independent movie he got to make with complete artistic freedom after that contract was up. So this is kind of his therapy session, I guess. It's sort of an exorcism of getting over her death, because he was at least figuratively, if not literally, haunted by her ghost for years after her death. At one point, he abandoned a shooting location on a movie because he said she appeared to him in a vision and told him that it wasn't the right place to do the movie.
Wow.
So, it was a deep, deep obsession. And so this movie about this beautiful, innocent ingenue kind of stumbling into this weird, sleazy world of freaks and weirdos was... I mean, the way I read it anyway is kind of him displaying how he felt about Soledad Miranda's innocence being used up in this smutty exploitation film world.
Wow.
Maybe that's just a little bit of armchair psychology there. But
well, it fits. I mean, if you connect all the dots, that you can definitely read that into it. I did not realize that this movie was... such a
passion project.
Yeah, I would have thought it was something, you know, that he just did just, you know,
for the paycheck,
just to work.
I mean, he a lot of times spoke of film as jazz. He was a big jazz fan. He loved the improvisational nature of it, and that's why a lot of his movies don't make any goddamn sense. But at least this one makes no sense with the focus.
Right.
Yeah. There is a little bit of a weird incest thing going on throughout this movie between the, you know, the spirits at the house and the extended family, a lot of like violent rape amongst each other that I absolutely did not understand. But I'd say outside of that element, this movie tracked pretty well. Like it made sense. It felt like spirits beckoning a person to stay and join the family and lock them in.
Are they related? I took them as each one was their individual person that was grabbed by vampire lady, and then they were doomed to stay there forever.
Well, you got uncle, aunt, and cousin, I believe. Then you got helper and other person.
Okay.
Carmenza is the other blonde, the cousin, the really tall one, who's writhing around on the floor while Jess Franco ogles her in that one scene.
Right.
Which I almost wonder if, you know, and Christina's watching from the shadows, horrified. I wonder if that was even a little exercising some guilt of, you know, continuing to make these sleazy movies with somebody other than Miranda and her chastising him from the afterlife. I don't know. That's probably just me doing too much work for the movie. But
now that is something an armchair psychologist would say, sir.
Indeed, I'm guilty as charged. The woman who plays the Queen of Darkness and Carmenza's pet lesbian blind blood donor ghost, Linda, they both even look a little bit like Miranda with the dark hair and the facial structures and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been massively difficult for me to identify a lot of the, you know, actors used in this period of filmmaking, and particularly women, because they all get dolled up and treated as like sex objects, and just like everybody has the same haircut. And it's like, I feel stupid for saying that out loud, but it is absolutely baffling to track some of these characters and narratives sometimes just based on the art direction alone.
Yeah.
I've never had that problem.
With this movie?
With any movie, really. I mean, like,
My
I don't want to say
they're all interchangeable.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything racist about white people, but like they're all you can pretty much tell them apart. You know, like
sometimes. I mean,
yeah. You know what's weird? Do you ever like meet somebody who has like a face? And then you see that face on different people all the time, yeah. like a certain face, like oh, and then you just like
all the time,
Irish people have like a certain fucking like like cherub kind of face going on, where I'm like, I assume these people are all related, but I've seen like 900 different people with the same fucking leprechaun thing going on.
Yeah, it's like we're a bad video game program and there are only so many skins.
Right. Well, yeah. You can only do so much with a face. That like how like I'm kind of shocked that there are so many different ones anyway.
I literally just met this guy in a bar and I was like, yo, you look just like my friend Rob. Can I take a picture of you? And he goes, what? My name's Rob. And like I took pictures and I put them next to each other and it was just the same guy.
Oh, yeah.
Completely different place in the country, but the same guy.
I get people want to take pictures of me because I look like that guy from The Office all the time. All the time.
You kind of behave like that guy from The Office.
Yeah.
You mean Stanley?
I wish I had watched this in French because, like, as much as I enjoyed it, part of the, I guess, the enjoyment slash detraction, like, the bit that I have is from the dubbing. Like when she meets her aunt and she walks in and she's like
coughing and smoking a cigarette.
Right. And she just said, hi, are you my aunt? I forget what the name was. And she's just like, yeah. Yes.
Oh, wait. No, yeah.
Yes, I am your aunt.
Do you ever wonder like the lives of the people who dub these movies? They're like, oh, God, we got another one of these fucking movies to dub. And it's like, hey, yo, I need
a dream job.
Well, I mean, for us, yeah, but you're some lady in, like, 1972 who, like, needs to, like, do this on the side of your fucking, like, bartender gig so you can pay, you know, the rent in your shitty fucking Brooklyn apartment. So you're just like, all right, give me these lines. Yes, it's you. Yes, yes, the castle is locked for the night. You're just getting it out of the fucking way because, you know.
Believe it or not, this is the best room in the place.
Yeah.
I imagine that, like, the dubbing and the act of dubbing is so much easier than to try to write the dialogue for the dub.
Oh, yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, how the fuck do you start? I imagine half the people that did that weren't even translators, and they were just winging it on what they saw.
They were just people that left bat corpses on a bed for reasons.
I love it when it's like there's especially like in kung fu movies where it's clear this guy said three separate lines spaced out, but the dubber just says one line, but he just spaces out, so it's like, I will come back and avenge my father.
You know? All monotone.
Right. But, you know, like, in the original, like, no, that guy said three separate things. And this guy just stretched out one sentence.
Yo.
You said you wish you would have... Go ahead, sorry.
No, Brian, you got it.
I was going to say, you wish you would have watched it in the original French because it maybe would have classed it up a little bit or been better. But these things were shot without sync sound. The French version is a dub too. For all you know, that's also terrible.
Yeah. Right, right.
Tell because it's in French.
Right,
but it sounds so right. Much I wouldn't more know. Sexy.
Yeah. You can voice me.
Your accents. If I was watching this behind closed doors and somebody walked by on those closed doors, for all they know, I'm watching some sort of art house movie from the '60s, and if I had the dubbing version on, they'd probably assume I was watching straight up porn.
All right. Did everybody's versions start off with that sick song in the very beginning where it's like, bum, bum,
yes.
Bum, yeah. Bum,
bum. Oh, yeah. It's like, fuck. Yeah. Like, I'm pumped already.
That's
like,
my first note on my notes is, yo, cold opening credits music.
Yeah. Awesome. Like, it got me so fucking hyped up and, like, amped.
It was vaguely Fabio Fritzi-esque.
Right. If for a movie that was just going to be, like, dreary walking around.
Yeah.
Fucking haunted castle.
Yeah, they certainly did walk around.
Even that, I thought there was a lot of wonderful collage, like audio collage artwork with, like, ticking of clocks and, like, sinister noises
at
all the right moments. Like, the audio design of this movie was on point.
Yeah. That pond with the lily pads, like, that showed up a lot in this movie. Yeah.
Whatever happened to the guy who got chased out? He saved the girl from the leering men and then took her back to the castle.
Yeah. He got yelled at by the
undead. They visited the weird dude who was standing by the Saint Cecilia place that was locked up.
Shrine.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? The guy who dubbed that guy's voice reminded me of Ryan. I thought that was
a
fan dubbing, and Ryan got in on the action.
Yeah, I would not want to go around showing your ass like that. Or whatever it is he says.
I would love to fan dub a movie.
I think it would be great.
We could do that for fun.
Okay, the scene where she walks into the room and we have the scissors and blood going on.
Oh, wow, that's the best part of the movie. How did I forget that?
Is there like some weird double take that happens? Because I don't know if I just like zoned out for a second, but did she come back into the room again?
I think she just kind of stood there for a while and the lady kept repeating herself. They were just trying to get as much tit stabbing, blood drinking as they could milk from that.
But I almost like for
nipple
some
nibbling.
Right, for some reason though I registered it as though she had left the room but walked back to the door. Right.
It's sort of like you playing like an old PlayStation game and you walk out of a place after like you get the dialogue from a character and then like you accidentally walk back in and it happens again.
It's like, what? Now, I think you mentioned this something about vampires. Is this a vampire movie?
I guess so.
There's just that kind. I mean, there's bat corpses and one. There's some blood drinking going on, but there's a Renfield character,
right? It's like Dracula who keeps all his brides and you know the castle.
Yeah, so I guess.
But they're not all brides.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But I mean,
some of them are just randos.
Right. But it's still like that, like. There's a group of people undead that they like to keep as pets.
Yeah. It was funny when Jess Franco picked up Christina from that tavern. I thought he was going to drive her to the castle, but then they're both in the back seat. So I'm just some random person driving them as he's making weird noises.
There's a great moment early on when she and Basilio are talking, and it's revealed that Christina's just walking around with no pants on, but she has like a shirt. And so, like, it's kind of a reveal that there are no pants on. And it's really
clumsy. The music, like, just, like, abruptly ends or something. It was really weird.
I took a screenshot of that because it was just, like, I got a kick out of it. But it was just, like, so clumsy and weird.
Yeah.
The sort of procession that happens at the end is very...
Yeah.
Very...
Yes.
Something. I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but I like it.
I know
they just walk into the pond.
Yeah, it's very, very let's scare Jessica to death.
Yeah,
but it has that melancholy, morbid poetry that movie has that really kind of helps it gel all together. It's a good ending.
Yeah,
which is kind of what goes back to me wishing I had watched it in French because I feel like that scene should have had. Like on its own, you know, had a resonance, but like I feel like it would have had more if I hadn't watched it with like you know the somewhat goofy dub going on.
So like what the queen of the night or whatever, like speaking in French, bringing her into the undead world.
Yeah,
that would be better.
I would think, but I don't know.
So we couldn't afford a river Styx. We just have this pond.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
A pond of Styx.
Yeah, I mean, we...
Like a pond of lily pads.
Yeah. We got to be conscious of the budget here. Yeah. They did their best.
Some friends of our family used to have this timeshare cabin on a lake around here when I was a kid, and we used to go there all in the summertime and go swimming in the lake, but it was really fucking gross. Because there was so much seaweed in that lake, anytime you would swim, it would just wrap around your arms and legs, and you could feel it brushing against you. And when you'd come up to the beach, you'd always end up stepping on like dead perch and shit. And so all I could think of every time they had one of those scenes with her swimming around, there's like, wow, this is such an artistic shot with this gorgeous act swimming in this kind of pretty little wooded area, but you see the lily pads like brushing all over. over her, and all I could think was like, oh my god, that's just, I can imagine how that feels, and yeah. It's so gross.
Yeah.
Movies make looking like camp movies and any horror slasher make it look really easy to go swimming in lakes. Like,
yeah.
No thing at all. Yeah. But lakes are nasty.
They're gross.
I was fine with them. Until one day
that blob got you.
I rescued a snapper turtle from getting ran over, and it looked up at me, and it went,
yeah.
And I was like, that thing could take fucking three toes off easily, and I never went to a fucking lake again.
I can't remember if I went over this already, but I remember working at a summer camp, and like the initiation, like to be one of the cool kids,
yeah,
would be to go out to the deep dock. That there's like this little floating dock in the deep end of the lake where you could swim, and you had to jump all the way down and just like grab some muck or some seaweed from the bottom of the lake and bring it up and show I made it to the bottom.
All right.
And it was just reaching into that. I still remember. I was just like, I thought something was going to come out and grab
right,
me.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. And you did it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Braver man than me.
Because you are really cool.
Did you have to do it at night? You still have your cool badge, right?
I mean, I cried afterwards, but, you know.
I wouldn't blame you at all. Summer camp.
Does anybody have any more stuff they want to chime in on?
The doctor had a great face.
Oh, yeah.
He looked like bug-eyed.
Yeah, he looked like he was really into like that girl being in like a short gown,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah, I mean, we can't really. The doctor is one of the people that were gazing at her while she was swimming, right?
Or, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
The guy called her, and he's like, yeah, "Whoa, naked."
He's definitely.
What was that like dubbed in English?
It was.
Oh yeah, the voices didn't really match up well. That's for sure. I remember that kind of sticking out. I'm like, oh yeah.
But he looks like somebody from like a 50s nudie movie. That's always peeping.
Yeah, like a peeping Tom.
You know,
yeah.
Like he always, you know, like one of like Herschel Gordon Lewis's old movies,
yeah.
Like pre-Blood Feast, or who's the guy who did Faster Pussycat Kill Kill?
Russ Meyer.
Yeah, yeah. Like he always had like weird dudes. Like, oh wow, yeah. Big tits. Oh. Yeah.
the other guy, the newly looking motherfucker, turned out to be the lawyer who shows up to read.
Yes.
Well later.
So I guess a lawyer and a doctor had nothing better to do but hide around the pond, hoping that maybe one day
it's gonna be a naked girl.
It'll be one day. It'll be worth it. We'll be worth it.
I mean, you know, in a small rural population, that is. There's chances of that, but perhaps they just happened upon her, and they were just really going out to diddle each other.
Yeah, that's some good luck. Oh, man, if I went from having to fuck that weird doctor to getting to peep at a beautiful lady, I'd be like, okay,
yeah.
All right, there is some divine force out there.
So, all around... Thumbs up, from Andrew, but kind
not so
of.
Much. But I'll still. I mean, I definitely see why you guys like this movie. I'm not there right now.
I was so pleasantly surprised that it wasn't the version of this movie I've watched before.
Yeah, wait. So you did watch the shorter version? Is that what you're saying?
I watched the 1983 version, is what it appears to be.
Oh,
it's different from the 1973, and then there's a producer's cut and a director's cut from early on, and then there's just some abomination cut from the 80s.
Yeah, okay. My understanding was it was Jess Franco's version with more nudity, and then more nudity and zombies. Was that how
goes? Did anybody have zombies in this one?
Mine had zombies.
Mine did
not.
And
they were the gray guys that come out of the water? Or come out of the ground?
They come out of the ground, yeah. Mm. It's like a...
Just like shitty gray zombies.
Yeah, yeah. And they were like so awkwardly zombies. You know what I mean? Like the actors were like overplaying zombies.
But it's like a dream sequence.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel dreamy at all. It feels like I'm watching one of those like late 80s shot on video movies where like some guy's like got his friends together to play zombies.
Hmm.
Right on. Yeah. So the one I had seen prior had even more zombies than that.
Wow. All right.
And no sex at all. No sex. Any.
I only
sex.
Had
There's
one.
Never a sex.
I only had one sex scene in mine.
Really?
I cried quite a bit.
Oh wow.
Same.
Okay. Yeah, we got it. We got to make an ultimate edition of this movie where we all get the copies that we and
fan edit. Gotta love Euro horror.
All right. We'll be back after this word from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Joe, tell the folks at home all about Awakening of the Beast.
A doctor shares the data on his experiments to test the hypothesis that drug use leads to sexual perversion. It's amazing what LSD and a Coffin Joe movie poster can do to the mind.
This is my third Coffin Joe movie. I've only seen At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul, and Tonight, I'll Possess Your Corpse. And
This
Night, I'll Possess Your Corpse. And I love the first one, and I like the second one. And this one is on the like thing. It's nowhere near as good as the first one.
Okay.
Or the second one.
You did take everybody behind the curtain for a minute. Not like there really is a curtain. We're out there in the wind like all the time anyway. But you asked me if we should do this one or if we should do
the Bloody Exorcism
of Coffin Joe. And I opted for this one.
That's why we chose it.
I had not watched it for quite a while, and I did not remember the black and white, the story arc being so much of the movie.
Right, right. It was interesting at first to see like how many times somebody can do drugs and fucking die.
Yeah.
And then after a bit, it was just kind of like, okay, I get it.
Or then, like someone piss on someone.
Right, like, right. I liked it when the lady got fucked to death by the Jesus stick. The
giant fucking stick.
Yeah.
I knew that would be your favorite scene.
But then I was like, okay, this ain't nothing I can do from a night of hanging out on Craigslist. So then we get to the cool, like,
what Craigslist are you hanging out on?
Well, none of them now. They took all the sex ads off. But there was a cool jury... but yeah, there's like a weird scene where he's on Brazilian TV and has to like defend his artwork to these like random people. And then this other movie like nerd guy comes in and fucking sells his shit really well. And everybody's like, okay, like Coffin Joe is a cool dude. And I was like, okay, this is all right. I'm enjoying it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, for 30 minutes, is
Coffin Joe, the
coolest LSD trip in the world on film.
That's, you know, so when this movie started, you get like the coffin opening and it's like Coffin Joe and it's all these different shots. I'm like, fuck yeah.
Coffin Joe, like, this Coffin is, Joe.
Yeah, the
Coffin
movie
Joe.
Kicks off screaming.
Yeah.
And then coffin and loud noise and spiders.
And then, yeah, I agree. It gets repetitive and a bit boring. And then you get more Coffin Joe.
Right.
I just kind of wish it was just those two things.
It's like the scene from This Night I'll Possess Your Corpse.
Oh, they do play that scene.
Right. But the thing is, when they play it in
that
movie.
Yeah, they play the scene before the scene.
Yeah, but they play it in black and white, so I was like, oh, I guess the whole movie will be black and white, you know, that part. And then the scene, the scene comes on, and it's for 30 minutes of these fucking beautiful colors and weird fucking ass people.
Oh my god, the ass faces.
Yeah, like monsters and him shooting fire.
If ass faces weren't good enough, they actually explode.
They
double down on having ass faces.
Coffin Joe has the coolest superpower. He snaps his finger and a beautiful woman in just her nightie appears. Yeah. Like an army of them. And I was like, holy shit. Like, fuck being Spider-Man. Like, it's just, oh, I need... You'll never see me again
And then he teleports. He teleports back mid-slap.
Right.
You
know, like, oh, yeah.
John, you know there would be a Twilight Zone twist where you would snap your fingers and you would get exactly that, and then you would just be met with the harsh reality of not knowing what to do with it.
Well, my dick will fall off or something.
Yeah, time enough at last.
Yeah.
But the women definitely have to show up in like granny panties and all that stuff.
That's fine.
Just soiled diapers.
Yeah. Brian, you alluded earlier that maybe you were knocked so hot on this movie.
It was like a horror themed after school special.
Yeah, it was kind of like almost like
the perils of drug
fine.
Use.
I was like, okay, whatever. It's
like you guys said. It comes out of the gate hard and heavy, and then just hits a fucking wall for like 45 minutes, and then the color kicks in, and suddenly I was interested again.
Yeah, that was
It. Yeah,
yeah.
It's I don't really know what they were getting at with this one, because it seems like the first intention is doing just like a gritty version of an after school special or like a Reefer Madness, but like more brutal. It just like,
yes,
just like there's a lot of just syringe use in this movie that for 1970, and I guess even Brazil, like that's wild.
It kind of reminds me kind of like, remember that Friday the 13th, which one is it, where it's kind of like they're talking about the making of Friday the 13th in it. Or not Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's like the end, you know.
Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or Cat in the Brain, where it's like the director's in the movie.
Yeah. A little bit like that, because it's kind of just like almost, I don't know, Satanic Panic meets Coffin Joe.
Right, right. And I never took, but at the end, weren't they, the guy who like, quote unquote, wrote the book, was like, hey, drugs aren't actually that bad. It just depends on like if it's a shitty person doing it or not. Which is a healthy way of looking at it.
I guess so, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty neutral. When he's on that weird like panel court thing, like that panel trial on television, he makes like a swinging defense that he's absolutely neutral on the position of drugs.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, if you want to do it, yeah, that's up to you.
I was kind of hoping when he got all animated on the stand that like it would just zoom in on his eyes and like it would turn like get all the black veins and stuff like that. And get, like,
oh, like if he just turned into Coffin.
Suddenly
had the powers.
That would be such a better movie if it and then that like turned, that was the Coffin Joe movie where now he's just tormenting these judgmental people into fucking nightmare world.
Well, it's another one of those movies that's like totally in three acts, and the first act is this like weird dark room discussion that then is revealed to be on TV, and then the second act is a whole like a different TV show that he's on, and it's very clearly TV, and then the third act is just the psychedelic experiment. So like on an act level, it kind of makes sense structurally that it goes down the way that it goes down, but I still don't understand why those things were all lined up with each other.
I'm curious if this is a movie where he had like footage from different things and then kind of like spliced them together to make a movie.
It could be.
You know, like
I kind of got the impression through that court scene that he, you know, that this was a little bit of a commentary on just what it was like to, you know, the trials and tribulations of an artist in Brazil at the time.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I kind of got the feeling like the awesome stuff in this movie was what he made first.
Yes.
And then they basically told him, look, this is, you're fucking here. We can't, no. You got to do something for the public good. And, you know, basically turned it into the after school special to get them to release his weird footage.
Right, because he faced like heavy censorship for his first few movies.
Yeah, part of me thought,
did he?
I wasn't sure if like some of the footage was like real footage or something like him. I imagine got a lot of criticism being such
like
a religious
the girl getting
country.
Fucked to death with a stick was real,
right?
Not that far. More like the on TV, the stuff that's on TV.
Well, isn't it interesting that not only is he on trial, he's like on trial and then kind of acquitted, and then they put Coffin Joe as a character on trial.
Is that what happens?
Is that because they just, they use his name first and then they shift to Coffin Joe as Coffin Joe's name, which is like, I just thought a really interesting flair to that thing. Like they were like giving rule on the character,
I guess, as a means to have a separation between the artist and the creation.
Yeah, because it's they all kind of agree with him that he's not so problematic, but then they get to the character and everybody's like, nope, the character is still problematic.
Are those Coffin Joe comics
that's
real?
Why he's a villain.
Oh, the ones that show up in the opening credits?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know the box that I had when it came out when I was like 2004. You know what I'm talking about, Joe. Mm.
Yeah, the coffins.
It came with a little comic book, but I thought that was made for
It came with three, actually.
Right. But apparently, like, according to this movie, he had like a whole series of comics, and I wonder if like he really did, because they show him going, and it looks like Bernie Wrightson era fucking Tales from the Crypt shit. And
yeah, it does.
Like, I want, like, when I'm a millionaire, I'm gonna have every issue of that shit.
That's yeah.
Brian, this is your first Coffin Joe movie, right?
No, I'm watching these things completely ass backwards. I have seen Embodiment of Evil.
Oh, okay.
I have not seen that yet.
Yeah,
none of you have, and I've been trying to get you to watch it for forever.
I will. It for Halloween. I'm going to do that and Bloody Exorcism of Coffin Joe.
I bought it not realizing that it was a continuation of the story from the first two movies. I for some reason, was under the impression that they were all standalone things. And so I at least was familiar enough with what he was doing in the first two movies to be able to understand what was happening in Embodiment of Evil. But it felt, and this movie really kind of poked a hole in my thoughts about that one, because Embodiment is very, very gory. It was made around the, you know, when the Saw movies and the Hostel movies and everything were coming out. So it's very much in that vein. There's a lot of, I fucking hate this term, but for ease of reference, torture porn. And it struck me as feeling very awkward in that movie, because he always seemed to me to be more of like a classic horror type, you know, like a 40s, 50s, 60s horror host type of character.
Right.
That didn't have that strong bent towards being really gruesome. But then this one kind of puts the lie to that, because there's a lot of fucked up stuff in this movie too. So
it really is.
I guess he's just accelerated as he went on.
Wait, so you haven't gone back? You haven't watched, Brian? You haven't watched the first two?
No, I do have them. I just haven't watched them yet.
Save them for October.
Brian.
Yeah.
Will you continue the trend of watching them in backwards order?
That's an interesting way to go about it. Yeah.
No, that was totally intentional, and I'll probably watch the first two in the correct order.
Did them going in the acid trip world remind everybody when the fourth Doctor had to go into the Matrix of the Time Lords and Deadly Assassins?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. At least somebody else could share that.
I thought we were going to get out of this one alive.
No, I think that's the whole reason he asked me to be on.
Yeah.
So he'd have some backup for the Doctor Who talk.
Oh, it was a setup this whole time?
Yeah.
This was a fucking ploy?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I thought you were just agreeing with them.
Well, I guess now that I think about it, it's more like Trial of a Time Lord, because we get the trial and him ending up in the Time Lord Matrix hallucination world.
You know what?
But
I never thought about it that way.
Didn't have Onslow from Keeping Up Appearances chasing him around, though. So
wait.
No, I literally fixed my storm door with a sonic screwdriver the other day. So.
Yeah, he has a toy sonic screwdriver that's a screwdriver, and now I need it.
I just like to see, like, you actually doing, like, real work with that, and, like, like other people with tools are around, and you're just, like, making the sonic screwdriver noise.
Waving it around.
It has an actual screwdriver that doesn't make noise. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's really funny.
No, you don't have to stop. We just got to put a muzzle on John. Fuck, I really enjoyed this movie, but I do think there's a principal flaw, is that it feels like it pads out runtime.
Yes.
Things move way more slowly than they, I think, is necessary.
Yeah, I have stuff like this all the time where, you know, I remember things differently than how they actually are. I mean, everyone does, but I mean, I feel like I do it a lot with a lot of movies, but I really did not remember it being as lengthy as it is. I remembered it being a much shorter movie, but I know that there's no way that I saw some sort of shorter version of it. I know that what I watched was the same thing, because it was the same DVD. So,
I mean, it still is only 90 minutes. It's not, you know, just normal.
Yeah.
Length, but yeah, it's
but it didn't need to be 90 minutes.
It should have been 70.
Yes, right. Easily.
Yeah, it's like 70.
But I still say the Coffin Joe parts are worth watching.
Yeah.
It's worth watching this movie just to see that.
Which is why I ultimately went with this one when John asked me over Bloody Exorcism, because even though Bloody Exorcism is somewhat more of a Coffin Joe movie, even though it's, you know, I won't give too much of it away for people that haven't seen it, because, you know, it's one of those, you know, it's got a tricky narrative to it, but like it's somewhat more of a traditional Coffin Joe movie, not totally, but more than this. But the acid trip footage is just so bonkers,
yes,
that I felt like I had to choose this one over Bloody Exorcism.
Did Rob Zombie steal his whole aesthetic from the end of this movie?
I'm sorry.
You mean like the radical colors?
There's a lot of samples from this movie on the Astro Creep 2000 album.
Okay, so now,
oh shit!
All right, we're on to you, Rob Zombie.
Hey, yo! Credit for Rob Zombie to, you know, at least hone in on this cool shit.
That weird choral song that plays over the credits in this is the opening to the song "I Love White Zombie," by the way. So that's why I love playing Spot the Sample, because there's just so many of them.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
And for the longest time, I had no idea what that was from, but that choral song sounds a lot like the Akira Ifukube penned "A Prayer for Peace" from the original Godzilla.
Oh yeah,
where after his first attack, they're showing the nation mourning on television, and they have that children's choir singing, and that's I always thought it was that, but it's just that little bit off. Yeah, the opening music over the credits in this. It's
no shit.
The music from this isn't from Godzilla. It's from the White Zombie song, but they just sound very similar. And I always thought Zombie was sampling Godzilla, but it was this.
Have you ever listened to Fabio Frizzi's take on the Godzilla music?
No.
Okay. Well, you know about the Luigi Cozzi...
Godzilla, yeah.
Yeah.
I have it. I just haven't watched it yet.
So Fabio Frizzi takes his version, but he uses the Prayer for Peace... like melody, and uses that. If I could speak music more, I could articulate myself better. But if you listen to it, you'll hear it, and he uses it in the most like cool, morbid way. And there's also a piece from the zombie theme in it, which I think he worked on like the year later.
Wow!
No shit.
Yeah. But just look up Fabio Frizzi Godzilla and listen to it. It's fucking cool.
I'll have to dig those out. I've got the files for all that, and I think I have a separate soundtrack file for it even.
On the subject of music, this movie has some pretty friggin' cool garage music with, like, that song that's, you know, that happens at the end credits and a few times through the movie, and it's, like, on the DVD menu. That's fun. I like that.
I like that stuff, too. Sound. That weird hippie stuff.
You know, that reminds me of, in this movie, when they're all, there's, like, a bunch of, like, perverted people standing around the one girl who's, like, who ultimately gets fucked with that stick.
Yeah.
They're doing this weird finger game noise, like, and it sounds like skeleton bones, and it's going like, like that. And I just thought it was great. I was like, oh, it sounds like skeleton bones.
There's a lot of like weird, silly noises that just pop out of nowhere in this movie to just punctuate random things, especially during like in the first like 30 minutes.
During the last 30 minutes, the sound design of this hell landscape that they all go to is fucking perfect. And I feel like it's that kind of thing that still upsets me when I watch a movie. Like, there's some weird, like, element of my youth that it taps and, like, makes me feel uncomfortable. It reminds me of, like, old horror houses and, like, haunted houses and stuff.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's so fucking cool. And there's, like, women wailing and, like, weird screeching noises and, like, oh, it's so dope.
Sound design definitely has a power to unsettle that's a lot greater than most visual effects in a movie.
Right.
It's so true.
I think it tickles your imagination more. That's why.
That's why the Exorcist is such like a double whammy, because it has both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And The Shining.
Yes.
It's amazing that modern horror movies frequently lack that. Like, say for like that A24 string of horror movies, you know, and like things along those lines, your average horror movie just like people don't understand that. Like, it's just non-existent.
It Comes at Night has some of the best sound design I've ever heard in a movie.
Yeah.
There's a scene in that isn't particularly scary, but the sound scared the shit out of me.
I actually worked with the guy that did the score on that. He's a chiller.
Wait, what scene are you talking about? I want to like revisit.
When they go out to when his dog runs out, and he chases it out into the night, and you know, it's just a kid walking around in his darkened yard with a flashlight. There's nothing even happening on the screen, but there's this sound right at the end of that scene that I just about.
Oh, is that when he's like ceiling. Looking out into? You don't see what he's looking at. Like
no.
But I'm thinking of a different scene then. Is it with the kid?
When he's outside at night.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember the sound, but I remember that scene. Okay.
The
what a great movie.
I was surprised that I enjoyed that movie more the second time around because I really felt Joe about it the first time around.
Yeah.
Well, me too.
It's about time you guys.
Well, you were right the first time.
We're not doing this again.
All right, there is startling imagery that we need to talk about in this hell landscape, the psychedelic trip. And I don't know if we think it's just cool or actually think it's scary or think some of it's silly and just fun. But the idea of snapping your fingers and murdering people Thanos style, but like with the blood as like a leftover.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Where that girl's ultimately like covered in blood.
Yes, that was my favorite.
Andrew, I feel like you either loved or hated the little tree goblin that shows up that he like fights.
Yes.
Oh.
There's so much weird shit that's no, I know what you're talking about, and it like kind of like it's like a weird puppet thing that
Oh yeah.
Just is it at the base of a bush that it's dragging with itself?
Oh, I guess I didn't love or hate that. I was just like
I was just enthralled with the whole thing.
Oh, the faces and the masks that some of the people were wearing.
Yeah. If when I'm a billionaire, that's what my Eyes Wide Shut orgy is going to look like.
With just, all the butt faces, too.
That whole scene. That's it. Like, so everybody be ready when you get my Christmas Eve invitation to have a face drawn on your ass and tree bush monsters.
I am there, John. I am there for that. That's fucking cool.
My first time watching this movie, I had, like, I almost never dream. I mean, everybody always, like, dreams pretty much, but I usually sleep.
Joe has no dreams.
Well, usually sleep for me is just a black void. Mm. And
that's your wide awake life.
Yeah,
let's be fair here.
That would be insane, though, if your dreams were.
What does that mean?
I sometimes I wonder if you murder people.
Joe is a happy father of three.
Because he murders
surely
people.
One of us is going to be the murderer.
He gets a prostitute and does that thing that makes him feel like God, and then he goes.
Yeah. Then he goes and hugs his children.
Well, yeah, because that's how you feel victorious.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had a very bad sleep experience after my first time watching this.
Great. I need to hear this.
Well, I mean, there isn't a whole lot to go on, but I mean, like, it did a number on me. Like, I was seeing, like I had a dream where I just saw all kinds of, like, vaguely uncomfortable stuff, and it's very rare that I ever get hit like that with a movie, especially when, like, it's not even like I was all that
perturbed
while I was watching it, but I guess it did like some kind of number on my subconscious the first time.
I love Coffin Joe like the same way I love King Diamond. To me, he's like the King Diamond of horror movies. So I'm never like frightened when I watch his. Like it's like watching Dad, you know, like hey, there he is.
It's fun.
I feel like you're never frightened watching his movies.
Who, my dad?
Yeah,
your dad's movie.
The ones he makes and sits
my dad,
you down.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, when you said that, did
20
you mean
cats?
You mean the idea of like a dad or your dad?
No, like a father figure. Yeah, like when you see like Henry Fonda. Or
so
something.
Not your dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh no.
Yeah,
no
you
no.
know how like when you see Henry Fonda and you're like, "There's cool hippie dad."
Yeah.
Don't call it, you know, Fonda hippie.
There's hippie dad. There's serial killer dad. How many other dads do we have?
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. There's something John comforting in that.
Right, right, right. It's, yeah, like when you see John Saxon, you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Of the people in this conversation right now, who has, you know, may or maybe unofficially off the record had experience with LSD?
Joe, you're a huge acid head, aren't you?
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Allegedly. I'm going to vote Joe.
Well, I don't know who.
I allegedly may have had one or two experiences.
Well, potentially, has anybody just read a bunch of Timothy Leary or Robert Anton Wilson? That'd be a good place. You can't just do a syringe of acid, and I like that that's what's implied in this movie. It's like they're doing thousands of hits, and then they're all comatose, and they go into the poster. And then what I thought was heroin earlier on in the movie ends up to be revealed as implied as psychedelics.
You're
not just fucking shooting that shit into you.
Yeah.
That would fuck you up.
I was thinking like...
That's why they were in the Coffin Joe Hell world.
True. So I give that moment in the movie some credit, but I don't give the rest of the moment in the movie because it can't kill you.
In the beginning, they were just smoking roaches, and I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, I've taken, like, heavy bong hits and did not dress up like some Bible figure and impale a girl.
You don't know it was in those roaches.
Yeah.
That's
true.
Yeah. It's pretty great that now we have stores where we can just buy M&Ms that get you fucked up.
Well, you do. Like,
well, we as a collective are getting close to it. Philly's got their shit. But, you know, we also had the satanic panic, and people are scared of things.
Back to the beast.
Yes.
Anybody have anything else they would like to say?
Well, I was going to say that the reason you guys chose this, or we chose this movie, was because of Coffin Joe Jose Marin's passing. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Rest in peace.
And I hope that one day Brazil puts his Coffin Joe face on like their currency or something like that.
Right, right, right.
That'd be cool.
What's that giant, like, don't they have a giant Jesus statue there?
Yeah.
Just put a top hat on
there. Yeah, when I'm a dictator, that shit's getting toppled down and we're getting a giant Coffin Joe statue in Brazil.
Just him giving the creepy look, like
his long ass fingernails and everything.
Oh, and you're like the dictator of Rio de Janeiro? That's where you see your life tracking?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, they already have an awful dictator right now. Why can't I do it?
Fun fact, he
has coronavirus.
Well, he does have coronavirus.
Yeah, he has coronavirus.
No, that wasn't where I was going.
Oh, well, that's fun fact.
Sepultura did a charity event.
Right.
This is back, I think, like, Roots era.
Okay.
Yeah. Noted Brazilian thrash metal band.
Yeah, although by Roots, that was out the window.
Yeah.
But Coffin Joe, Jose Mojica Marin's actually, for the charity, I'm not sure exactly how it worked, how it was applied to the charity, but he actually cut his fingernails.
Wow.
For the charity. So someone out there... Yeah. Presumably has his original nails that he had grown out from 1960, whatever.
All right, Awakening of the Beast versus Virgin Among the Living Dead. Andrew, you start.
I mean, I'll go with Awakening of the Beast just because of the scenes I really liked. And a Virgin, I didn't really have those scenes.
Brian, how about yourself?
Virgin all the way. They were both movies with a statement to make. I think Virgin made its statement more subtly and therefore more successfully. I guess this might be a better way to answer the question Ryan asked me earlier, what I thought of it, that had Awakening been 70 minutes instead of 90 minutes and focused more on the surreal weirdness and made its pokes at the Brazilian censorship a little less of the main part of the movie, I think I would have enjoyed it more. I could have that hellscape imagery just on a loop on a screen in the background all the time and just be sort of feel at home with that.
Yes.
Thing. But yeah, just being beat over the head with the after school special part of it for way too long kind of knocked this one down a peg in my estimation.
Ryan, how about you?
Ooh, this is hard. I pretty much agree with the way Brian just summed it up. The version of Virgin Among the Living Dead that I watched was very articulate and just it felt to me to be a really good ghost story, very solid Euro sexy ghost story. Whereas, you know, Awakening of the Beast really does hit you over the head with a lot. However, I think I'd agree with Andrew in that, you know, the moments in it that I do like, I really, really like. And the last 30 minutes of that movie with the hellscape is just worth, I think, getting through the first hour alone. And I found it thoroughly enjoyable. It's a really, really, really tough call, but I think I'll give it to Awakening.
Ooh, oh, wow. Wow, yeah.
I thought I was going to be alone on this one.
Joe.
It is very difficult for me to go against Coffin Joe. Really, I should, because Virgin Among the Living Dead is the better put together movie of the two. But that glorious 30 minutes of Awakening of the Beast is so what I'm after.
It's like Hercules in the Haunted World, but like aggressively attacking you.
Yes.
Very sleazy version.
Yes. Wow.
It's a tough one. I didn't think it would be so difficult when I chose these two. I picked these two movies on a whim. Like I wanted to do it with Jess Franco finally, and then Coffin Joe just died. And actually you picked this one. I just kind of knew we should do a Coffin Joe.
Yeah.
But they kind of worked together as a double feature pretty well.
Really well.
Yeah.
Joe, what's your take?
I'm going to go with Virgin. And it hurts me to do it, but I have to be like if I'm being honest, like weighing them equally, then it has to be Virgin.
I feel like John's sigh reveals that you've just made this hard for him.
Yeah, he's a tiebreaker now.
Right. And like, I don't want to be because I enjoyed both. I'm going to give a. This is a superficial way of breaking the two, but I feel like it somewhat works. It's October, and I have a few people over.
It might be October when this episode comes out.
And they want to watch a weird movie, and I only have these two. I feel like I could get more the spirit of what's going on with Awakening of the Beast with this. It just being a more of a what the fuck movie, but like I feel like with Virgin Among the Living Dead you have to like be able to get into a certain mindset. Well, Awakening of the Beast you can gather more people for it. I know that's a totally superficial way.
I get
choosing.
That. No, I feel like a virgin.
You feel like a virgin.
I feel
like a virgin.
A virgin among the living dead, like with a crowd of people, could go either way.
Right. Well, Awakening, I feel like I could always wake people up with that, at least with that last half hour. But I mean, we're all.
You put it on, play a board game, and then the last half hour happens, and everybody's like, what is going on?
At the same time, the five of us are jaded weirdos. Like, normal people watching that first half hour of like weird drug like antics would probably weird some people out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's old news to us, but like, if my mom watched it, she would be like, yeah, that lady that's like talking to the guy who wants to have sex with her, and he keeps turning into a pig.
Man.
Yeah, or a horse and shit. Like, that would weird her out.
But never thought of it that way. It never occurred to me, because I found most of that kind of boring, but that's a good point. How jaded do you have to be to think that that is dull?
Oh my God. Listen, all right, let me tell you a story. So years ago, like I would go onto Craigslist and look up their weird, like sex things, but I'd go into the Bible Belt where it was like really like repressed.
Oh, and where I live. Good.
And I remember, like, I looked at this ad, and it's like slave looking for master. And he had, like, 8 pictures. And I went through them, and I, like, giggled to myself and, like, left. Then I was like, wait a second. And I went back, and I looked at the pictures again. And I was like, holy shit. That's when it dawned on me, like, how fucking gone I am. This guy had mouse traps on his balls and his nipples. And it was the fact that, like, my weird, like, rambling of the internet, like, got me to this image. It was the fact that I looked at it.
That's a nice touch.
It didn't even, like, affect me at all. I just kept clicking past it. Yeah. Where I was like, holy shit. I just looked at, like... It was like I just came back from Vietnam or something. Like, I can see anything, and like, it
wouldn't shock you.
Right. I just keep driving my cab through the town.
Yeah. And the man in that image was former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. fuck you, Terry Branstad.
He was.
Yeah, fuck you, Terry.
Mike Pence answered, probably. On that note.
Wait, did you ever answer?
No. I never. I was not looking for these things. I was just like,
no. Not the ad. Like, which movie you like?
Oh, I thought no. I thought it was just. It was yeah. Okay. No. But in case
for
anybody
John
listening,
did answer. The
I did
ad.
Not. I do not answer. It was like when you would go on like eFucked or Rotten.com, where it's like, oh, I'm looking at something I should not be looking at. Awakening. Oh, but wow. By like 1%. Whoa. By 1%.
Yeah, it's a margin.
They're a great double feature, margin. Though. I'll remember that. Like, next time I bring like a bong out, and everybody wants to see something weird.
Yeah.
Brian, what Jess Franco movies would you recommend our wonderful audience? Because you seem to be.
His version of Count Dracula is surprisingly really good. It's. At least for the first half, until he got bored and started playing jazz with it, and that taxidermied animals come out.
That's the Christopher Lee one, right?
The only Dracula movie Christopher Lee was in that he wanted to be in and liked.
Yeah.
It's actually quite faithful to the book for the first half. Let's see. Two Undercover Angels is a lot of fun. That's kind of a weird Euro spy espionage kind of thing. That's a fun one, and Greta the Mad Butcher is pretty solid. That the bare-breasted countess / female vampire / erotic kill / whatever, any of the stuff he made with Lena Romay wandering around naked, that's all pretty good too.
I wonder why.
I would also like to throw Bloody Moon in there.
I've been meaning to watch Bloody Moon for. It's a like supposed to be a really fun slasher movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Be prepared. There is an unnecessary animal death in it, though.
Yeah.
Why do they do that? What kind of animal?
Snake.
Apparently, there's another one. I didn't watch it, but the person I was going to watch it with watched it instead. 99 Women has a brutal snake death in it.
Yeah, that's the movie that actually kind of kicked off the whole women in prison
thing. Really?
Yeah,
no kidding.
Wow, that was before the Big Dollhouse?
Oh, yeah. That was the beginning of his relationship with the British producer Harry Alan Towers, and Dracula was the end of that relationship. But, yeah, 99 Women came out. It was made for next to nothing. It brought in a shit ton of money, and then everyone's off to the races for women in prison movies.
Wow. Huh. You know, we kind of brought things around with the snake death, because the first Friday the 13th has a unnecessary snake death. I always forget about that. Wow, how did we do that? Was that planned?
No, none of it is ever planned.
Brian, you want to plug something before we go?
Check out Scream Magazine. You can subscribe at ScreamHorrorMag.com or pick them up on the shelf at any Barnes & Noble.
Hell yeah.
Nice. And you can reach us at LateNightPsychorama@gmail.com. Night is spelled NITE, and then we are on Instagram, Late Night Psychorama.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Brian's a professional, and I fucking have him on a show where I'm talking about where I went on the internet and looked at guys fucking mousetrap. I just realized that right now.
He's heard the show before.
Yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, but somebody, like, he might have an employer or somebody. He's like, oh, I want to listen to this guy. And you're like,
he also heard you say, like, only white people don't all look alike.
I didn't mean it like that. I did not say that.
That'll be the cold opening.
I did not say that.
I'm
not racist.
Oh. Hey,
you guys got some editing to do.
I gotta say, I've seen a lot of, you know, you can like us, you can review us, you can do all those things on all the platforms, and I have seen a spike in that. So thank you so much for doing that. We really appreciate it. I don't know about the rest of the gang, but it means the world to me.
Yes, very much. Ryan, do you have anything going on out there that you want to mention that maybe somebody out there...
if anybody has a job or a cool, cheap place to live, I'm all open. Or if you want to start a comedy troupe, I'd be down with that.
Yeah, I don't think we actually discussed it. So Ryan is no longer in person anymore with us.
He's just a sentient voice on the internet.
Ryan is now just a voice speaking to us from California.
The lovely sunny Los Angeles.
Where there is no weather.
Only nice.
Only nice. Yeah, so help Ryan out if you're out there. They answer to Ryan.
Thank you.
Are you still wearing your collar?
Am I still wearing my collar?
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's a Craigslist thing right there.
Yes, I will.
Still wearing the collar and the mouse traps.
Yeah. You can find me on Craigslist with the collar and the mouse traps. Yeah.
All right. I want to thank our guests and everybody. Everybody have a blessed night.
Good night. Thank you for being here, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you.
All right.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.
That was fun.
Yeah,
it was a fun time.
Thank you.